I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Passing the podcasting time with me this morning is the leading scorer of the Priest vs. Knights of Columbus basketball game, Father Garrett Burns.
What's up?
Were you also the leading fouler?
I heard
was.
You had
a double-double.
I was, double-double.
25 points and how many fouls?
10 fouls. First time a double-double's ever been done with fouls.
That away. And he was with them in spirit in the game, Father Drew Hoffman.
I'm a three-time seminary national basketball champion. Now, I was just
so why weren't you recruited for the game?
That's a great question. I'm like the cheerleader. I was like the cheerleader on those teams, like the Dennis Rodman type of just like playing hard, yelling.
I've always tried to describe you as
weird
Dennis
hair,
Rodman
weird hair.
Type. You have a weird thing with North Korea.
Yeah, I had mass. I wasn't able to make it. I had 7 and 9 o'clock mass. I'll also, again, we're recording this before the Super Bowl. I'll also be having 7 and 9 p.m. mass during the Super
How's
Bowl.
How's that feel?
It feels like Isaac Jogues must have fallen.
Another person I commonly describe you as Isaac Jogues, Dennis Rodman. Put those two together. You've got Father Drew Hoffman.
It's I had warned the people. They'll be short. There's just not going to be anybody there. There's not going to be anybody there.
I was going to say, who shows up for that mass?
There will be people who are there because they need to. There are the 7 and 9 at St. Paul are like a catch-all. So, hey, as a heads up, if you ever want to come to 7 and 9, they are a catch-all for the whole city. And so it's not just like at a college campus, generally, your 9 p.m. mass on a Sunday is just your college kids. That's not how the 9 p.m. at St. Paul works. And so we'll still have it. This will be well after. I'm sure the Chiefs will be Super Bowl champions, and I won't regret saying this at all.
At all. I've already got my AFC championship hat. I've got one for every year that we won the AFC championship.
Huge sports guy.
I know. That is the only professional memorabilia I own, are Chiefs AFC championship hats. So there you have it. Well, today we are passing the rock in the studio of St.
Wow.
That's what the hip basketball players say.
Hey, pass me the rock.
Still a phrase, right? People use that.
Yeah.
Sportsing, yeah.
Sportsing. Well, we are in the studio of St. Brian Aerosmith.
No, that's rock not, on.
That's not a real person.
Why might we name the studio after St. Brian? Because our guest today is the pastor of St. Mark's Parish and the current judicial vicar, Father Brian Nelson. Welcome.
I don't even know who that
saint
is.
Have you ever heard of St. Brian Aerosmith?
No.
I had to look up another English martyr. We were talking about them in a previous podcast. But the funny thing is, he didn't like the name Brian, so he actually is more commonly known as St. Edmund, because that was his confirmation saint, and he went by that. But his birth name was Brian, spelled the same way, because you're a B-R-I-A-N.
That is correct. The only right way to spell it.
The only right way. I always have to double, because we have another Brian down in the chancery who spells it a different way.
With a Y.
And I always have to recall when I'm writing emails, which is the proper way to spell it.
He spells his name wrong. Yeah. It's unfortunate. Yeah. I occasionally remind him of that. So
the Coulter family does a lot of things wrong. So just throw that out, because it's safe, because Father Isaac will never listen to this, because this is too modern for him.
But maybe Brian listens.
Brian might listen. Might listen. For Father Coulter, we'd have to put on like a wax cylinder and get like an old timey thing to play it. Well, maybe we start off just for our listeners out there. What is a judicial vicar? It's an imposing title.
Yeah, I get that question a lot, actually. They're like
from priests, probably.
Well, sometimes, but not too often from priests. You know, I describe the church as having the same three, instead of three branches, like, you know, the executive, the judicial, the legislative. We don't separate powers in the church, we consolidate them. So the bishop has all of those powers in the diocese, and he shares his legislative authority with no one. He shares his executive authority with the vicar general and any episcopal vicars that he might have. and he shares his judicial authority with the judicial vicar.
Nice.
So basically, my job is to do all of those things which the bishop really doesn't want to do.
Or many other people in the diocese, frankly.
Or many other people in the diocese.
What are some of those things?
Well, I mean, the biggest part is, of course, managing the tribunal.
Yeah.
Handling the annulments that come through. Despite what some people might think, I do not do all of the annulments in the diocese, although almost all of them come across my desk at one point or another. So most of them start on my desk, most of them finish on my desk, but there might be another priest that judges. I do judge some of them myself, but... And then I also handle any of the other canonical issues that the bishop has questions about, or make sure that we are doing what we're supposed to do canonically. There have been times when I, you know, snag the bishop or Father David and say, oh, we really ought to look at this, because if you're going to plan that action, we need to do this step first. So
every once in a while, I have to show up in your office with a canonical question.
Every once in a while. We have good conversations.
We do.
Which is why I brought the Code of Canon Law with me today.
As a judicial vicar always should. I assume you have like a copy in your glove box at all times.
There's no pocket version?
There's definitely not a pocket version of it. But I do know how to access it online. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. For our listeners out there, if you may not know, canon law is the official law of the church. I will say, post-seminary... Of all the seminary textbooks we've had, I've cracked my canon law book outside of the Bible and maybe a couple of commentaries. Outside of any other academic book we had for seminary, I've looked at my canon law more often.
As you should. I call it the other holy book.
What's your favorite canon?
Canon 1.
Salvation of souls?
No, that's the last canon. One.
That's the last canon is Salvation of Souls?
He won't be joining you in the tribunal.
Oh, no, that for a variety of reasons.
Would you like me to read you the first canon?
Yeah. This will be enticing podcasting. Cut this out for social clip.
Totally. The canons of this code regard only the Latin Church.
Oh, my goodness.
That's deep.
You know what? The beauty of the Code of Canon Law is that, one, it's a comprehensive code. So we have, you know, everything there, although it doesn't spell out every single little thing, because it's made for a universal church. So not everything that we're dealing with in the United States is things that they're dealing with in Europe or in Africa or Asia. But so it's all there, but it's given to those who are entrusted with the work to understand and interpret that, which is why there's, you know, it's 3 years of school that we go through to have a degree in canon law. But there are really good theological pieces that are contained in the Code of Canon Law. So if you look at any of the sacraments and you want like a really succinct description of our theology of a particular sacrament, look at the first canon for each of those. It's not preceptive at all. It is just a statement of the theology of the sacrament. And some of them are really very beautiful.
I would say that was one of the gifts in seminary. So as you guys know me, I come from a family that tends to be a little anti-authoritarian or distrustful of systems.
Yeah, sometimes. But what did your dad do?
He was an attorney for the state of Kansas,
that's what I thought.
Our life is full of ironies. But our canon law teacher, so I think in early seminary and that I looked askew at canon law, not as a friend, but as like, this is a governing, this is a hassle, things like that. But our canon law teacher, a shout out to Carol Houghton, was very strongly convicted that canon law is a gift to the church and that the Spirit can work through it and does work through it. And she was very adamant and her, like all good teachers, her faith in what she taught really buoyed up the rest of us. And then through her class, I did come to appreciate canon law as a gift, as a helpful, useful, as a loving gift of the church. And frankly, I've experienced that in my priesthood. Like I said, it's the book I open up the most because it does help in many situations. So where I would have started in theology may not have been a deep appreciation for your position. You would have been quote unquote the man. I have learned to appreciate your position. You less so, but your position. Yeah.
I always say nobody loves a canon lawyer until they need one.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Where are you at with canon law in a year, the podcast from Ascension presents?
You know, we're still in negotiations.
Yeah, that thing would make a... Well, imagine if it was your face on there instead of Father Mike's. If you've never seen Father Brian Nelson, full head of hair. He has just a beautiful flow that would look great on on a little emblem, canon law in a year.
Thank you for that description.
You're welcome.
Me with a full head of hair. Yeah. I can't wait till your hair looks like mine.
Will never happen. Will never happen.
We should also point out why that would be a difficult thing for canon law in a year is Brian is here under duress. You are our guest so far that has taken the most convincing to sit down in that seat.
How come?
I don't like doing these kinds of things.
How often are you doing these kinds of things? What are you talking about?
When Mike Nolan wants to find guys for the radio every year, I deflect him entirely. So we're not telling Mike Nolan that I'm doing this. Because I always say no.
Longtime listener Mike Nolan here.
You are, he was also my adjutant judicial vicar, but
yeah, I don't know what that means. Man.
I don't
you're
even know what that
so
word means.
So far from the tribunal, this is.
Well, you're also the chancellor, correct?
I forgot about that.
I apologize.
I don't know what the chancellor does either.
Yeah, nobody knows that either. So the role of the chancellor in the code
it's kind of
is,
a sick name.
Yeah,
chancellor is much cooler than judicial vicar.
Yeah, honestly. I won't tell you what some people call.
Do you wear a chain of office? Because that's what I think of when I chancel, like a big gold chain.
No, it's not. It's Palpatine. Not just the chain, but I have the big robe.
Oh, good.
Should we have stood when you entered the room? Like,
you should have stood and bowed, but you know, it's like I let it slide. No, the chancellor is the role of the chancellor is really simple in the code. It is twofold. The chancellor is the official notary of the bishop. So all of the bishop's official actions, his decrees, you know, appointments, all that kind of stuff, he signs it. The chancellor signs it, and then the chancellor is also responsible for record keeping. So I oversee the archives and that kind of stuff. It is not glamorous work, but it is important for what we do in the church. So,
as you said last week, let's close the chancery for a couple of weeks, and then everyone would notice.
Well, it was the bishop who said that.
That's a solid
that
point,
me,
though.
And said all of the things that we would never think about. And then we would realize, we as priests and probably the people of God to a certain extent, would realize all the stuff that you do that we don't ever think about.
Right. In most dioceses, because the roles of the chancellor are somewhat limited, there's usually other things on the chancellor's plate pretty quickly.
You would be awesome on a dating podcast. We should do, I've told you guys, dating, my dream is Dating Fast, a podcast for men on a permanent dating fast, helping you to get dating faster. That would be an incredible podcast, and you could give some tips and tricks and things from both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, you know, it really has impacted the way I do marriage preparation.
I bet.
You know, I see a lot of these pitfalls and things that I'd kind of always thought about before, but that have really come to the forefront of my mind. So then I'm with couples. I'm like, yeah, let's talk about this, because you know I see that as something that that you guys could fall into this trap or that trap or just as warnings and caution. So. Yeah, it does affect it.
Is there particular things you would say you could apply to the sermon of priestly vocation too? Maybe that you've seen, have you changed marriage prep? What you've learned from annulments? It's a different vocation. It's a different discernment. But
the beauty of what we do with discernment for priests is that we have time built into it. Yeah. And many people act hastily in their moving to marriage. And I think that's partially because a lot of people don't understand why. They don't understand why they're getting married. They just sort of have these like emotional responses to that. And so one of the things that I do with all of my couples at my first meeting is at the very end of the meeting, I just look at them and say, I have one last question for you. Why? And of course, it makes them squirm in their chair sometimes. And they look at me like, and I'm like, yes, I understand that is a really broad question, but I want you to tell me why. Why are you getting married? And you know, they'll give me answers. And sometimes those answers make me go, oh, we got some work to do here. Most of the time they give a decent answer, but then I sort of challenge them. I want you to think about this more deeply. And when you face challenges down the road, I want you to go back to your why. And I think that that's something that could easily be applied to a vocation, to priesthood or consecrated life or anything else in the church. If we understand why we're doing something, like, you know, the depths of the Lord calling me and where this all comes from, then I think we have something to hold on to when things are not easy and challenging and, you know, we're pissed at the world or whatever it is.
I do the same thing. And I had a guy tell me tax purposes. And
he was kind of
trying to be funny, but it was very obvious that he wasn't actually being funny. And I told him at the end, I said, guys, we can talk more about this, but this doesn't. You guys don't think this makes sense, right? And they're like, no, we're just coming because our parents told us. And I think only one party was Catholic. Our parents told us, like, this, let's discern this a little more. And they didn't. But
yeah,
it's a good question.
I ask a similar question in the initial meeting when guys come in and start the application. I ask, why now? Again, because part of the discernment is, well, why step in seminary now? And that, it's, sometimes there's some really great answers in there that I'm like, okay, that's, I want you to remember that for a while. And sometimes like, okay, that's a note for later to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, there's a priest of the diocese who will remain nameless. You are the chancellor and you work at the chancery. I don't know how common this mistake is, but he likes to put an L in the, he calls it the chancellery. And one of the other priests was correcting him, but he says, yeah, I don't correct you very often because it reminds me of like when a little kid gets a word wrong, it's kind of cute. And so you just let him keep making that mistake because it's funny to you. So for years, he's been letting this other priest refer to the chancery.
Oh, he's
the,
being serious.
Yes. For years, he's been calling the chancellery.
Like he has too much power or something.
Because his friend just thought it was funny. And he really thought it was called the chancellery and he can't keep it straight.
I don't know that I've ever heard a priest say that, but I have heard other people say that. You know, the chancellery, yeah. Yeah, I don't usually say much about it either. I just, you know, we'll slip in the word chancery.
We'll let it slide down the line.
But you're also a pastor, too.
I am also a pastor. And I am so grateful that the bishop lets me stay in a parish. Because I think if I just worked in the chancery, in the tribunal, as the chancellor, I might go crazy. I didn't get ordained to do paperwork.
Right.
And that's a lot of what I do downtown. It's important work. And I recognize the importance of it, especially with the annulment part of it, because we're dealing with people's lives and the status of their, you know, ability to move on or not, or, you know, how they move on or how they process that information. But, you know, there's a lot of really sad things that I see in annulment cases or things that are just really kind of tragic. And to be able to go back to a parish and to have those people that I minister to, it just is it's life-giving.
David Lee said the same. I mean, he expressed similar that if he wasn't covering as often as he was, vicar general stuff would be almost untenable. Father Carline shares that often, who's assistant to the bishop, that his work with Curcio and stuff like that is vital, or else you're not a robot, you're not a machine.
Right.
You're a priest.
Right. And so David actually will cover for me often. I'll call him, say, hey, you want to come back? Because he had been pastor at St. Lawrence before.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
And so it's kind of nice for him to go back there. And so.
And it's a beautiful church. You are blessed with a beautiful church.
It's a whole complex.
It's a beautiful church. It's a nice place. I describe it as a quiet country setting, close enough to town for everything you need. Maybe not everything you want right there, but everything you need is close by. But it's a quiet setting, good people. The facilities are well taken care of. The church is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Parish hall and our facilities over there are really nice. And
I think my great grandparents maybe are buried in your cemetery.
Maybe.
I think Johann and Johanna, Tommy.
I mean, I've memorized every name.
Yeah,
I've memorized every name that's in the cemetery, and you know, I'm just trying to have a hard time placing that. Yeah, the cemetery goes back to 1875.
Well, yeah, there's like a section in there that's all the tombstones are in German, right?
Just there are some that are in German. Yeah, the stained glass windows in the church are in German.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a cool place. It's a great history, good tradition, and the people have a lot of pride in the church, and it shows.
Nelson's not German, though, is it?
Nelson is not German, no.
Sounds English.
It's Swedish, actually.
Swedish?
Yeah.
Oh. Any blonde saints you know of from Sweden? We ran into this recently.
No, I listened to that episode, actually. I started thinking to myself, I don't know that I know of any either.
No one has sent, no, we've not really gotten. I mean, Amy Lomchek.
We got
said,
one, Amy Lomchek.
I don't even know who that was. I don't even know who those saints were. And so
who did Amy send in?
Just some stained glass windows stained glass that window. I didn't.
But she made the good point that a lot of saints are shown as gray haired, which may have been blonde previously.
True. Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
So you need to go prematurely gray and then you'll look more saintly.
People are always talking about me balding and going gray.
We are trying to help you.
Detachment.
Detachment. Exactly. That's exactly it.
Well, I think we've eaten up our time that I had allotted for banter with very important other things. So,
hey, you know, everybody loves to talk about canon law.
Do you have any other jobs? Are those the only three?
Those are the only three.
That's all you
only
do.
Three jobs. Yeah.
We can find you more if you need that. I've been looking for an assistant, so one that'll actually do some
work.
You
want to join the team? Yeah.
The ones that you have are useless.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I've heard that.
It's kind of become our tradition here on the podcast for our guests that come in, they would be willing to share their vocation story. So we were hoping you would do that with us this morning.
No.
Well,
thanks for listening.
This was fun.
I mean, I can do that. You know, I'll give you an easy version of it.
Your picture is in my slideshow that I present at Quo Vadis, just so you know. I don't know if you know that.
Really?
Because of his hair.
There was a time you had a fro. I remember that.
Is that true?
So believe it or not, I actually have curly hair. You know, I know people can't see, but I keep my hair fairly short now, mostly because I have very little of it on top.
God also keeps your hair fairly short in a few spots.
I have very little of it on top. I was looking at just yesterday in the parish office. We were pulling up the security cameras in the building to just kind of go through some things. And so I'm sitting at my secretary's desk, and there's one in the office, which is behind. And I pulled it up, and I'm like, who is the bald guy sitting at the desk? Because, you know, from the front, I see some hair on top. But from the top, there's not much there. So, but I have curly hair actually. So when it gets longer, it's like big curls. So like really goes out. And as I got more on top, I began to be like more like Bozo the Clown. So I stopped doing that. Keep it short now.
All right. Well, second try. Would you share your vocation story with us?
All right. I'll do that.
This is how I got you on the podcast. I just keep asking.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's nothing really striking about my vocation story. People ask where I was raised, and I'm like, it depends on what part of my life you're talking about. Because we moved around a bit. Early part of my life, my dad was in the Army. My family's all from Southeast Kansas. And then we ended up in the Wichita area. But throughout, like, especially later years in middle school and then into high school, and I went to Bishop Carroll, and I'm in good company here.
Four Bishop Carroll boys in there.
I had a number of people that, you know, would comment to me like, oh, you'd make a good priest. You'd think about being a priest. And I would always very quickly dismiss that because I was not one that like thought about it when I was younger. I'm like, oh, I think I could be a priest. And like that seemed really attractive. It was just not something that I really entertained. And I very quickly dismissed everybody who ever sort of suggested that to me. But there were a few things that happened along the way that I think opened me up a little bit more to the possibility. One of those was actually doing tech in high school. And so I did tech. And Father Matt McGinnis was the spiritual director for the weekend. I think it was the one and only tech that he ever did.
Yeah, because I don't usually think of him as associated with tech.
No. I think it was the only one he ever did. But because of that, I had gotten to know him a little bit. And my senior year in high school, a friend of mine, who we had actually been on several college visits together, and he and I were talking, and he's like, I don't know, I think I need to think about seminary. And that was the moment I'm like, well, maybe I should think about it too. And I still, to this day, I'm not really sure what snapped in me, but it was that. And so I told him, I said, well, I know Father Matt, I'll call him. So I called Father Matt and we started talking, and then he gave me paperwork because it's just not quite the same as it was, as it is today.
It's a little simpler.
And I just started doing it. Next thing I know, I'm going to seminary. And as I reflect on it, looking back, I think in many ways I was going to seminary to prove to myself and others that I was not supposed to be a priest. And it didn't really work out that way for me. and it was during seminary that that I really sort of like really did the work of discernment. For my freshman year of college, I was in Winona, Minnesota, and the end of the year doing the evaluation, self-evaluation and that stuff. And I'm sitting there with my spiritual director kind of going through it. And he just commented, he said, you didn't see anything in there about priesthood. And it just made me think, like, am I really serious about this? So I figured I've got two options, leave now or serious about discernment. And I'm like, well, I'm already here. And so I really got a little bit more serious about discernment then. But it was not until I was making the transition from college to theology school that I was really like, yeah, I really think this is what God wants for me. It took me some time. And I think, you know, back to what we said earlier about having people understand the why, I think I needed to understand a why. And theology school, I was much more convinced and much, not that I didn't have those like really angsty, like, oh, am I supposed to be here? Is this where God wants me? Maybe I should leave, you know, like that girl looks really good. Let's go, you know, see if I can get a date with her. No, it was just sort of like going with the flow, but I was in the midst of like really actually opening myself up to where it is that God wants me. And by the time I was ordained, I was very convinced. I mean, like as one would hope one is,
it is the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, guys that, you know, talk to me about it, they're like, oh, I just don't know. And I'm like, look, I said, you can ask the questions. You should ask the questions. But I can tell you that I have not once regretted the fact that I did this and that I got ordained and that I've served as a priest. It has been It's been a great almost 20-year ride now.
What year were you ordained?
2003.
Who was in that class with you?
Mike Simone and Mike Clagg. So it was Mike, and Brian. We're a very eclectic class.
You know, I think, though, that experience you were describing is very important for a number of seminarians to hear, because I talk with them. And there's a few guys right now in the system of our diocese, similar experience to you, where they couldn't quite put their finger on what happened when, and it almost feels like they're just going with the flow, but it makes sense. And there is that conviction there, but they talk with these other guys and they're like, well, they seem to have this really angsty moment, or they had this crossroads that everything seemed to be falling apart, and I haven't had that. Am I doing this wrong? I'm like, no, the Lord is just leading you by a different path, and that's good too, and that's great. I have literally had that conversation with a couple guys that they need to hear that, yeah, the Lord can work in this way too.
Absolutely. I mean, the Lord works in so many ways. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm always amazed at how the Lord is at work. Even in my priesthood today, I'm like, if you had told me 20 years ago, like, yeah, someday you'll have gotten a degree in canon law and we work in the chancery office, I'd be like, yeah, no, not gonna happen. But, you know, throughout the course of my priesthood, you know, there have been moments where the bishop has asked me to do something. I'm like, I don't think I want to do that. But the bishop's like, yeah, I want you to do that. Mm-hmm. And then I see tremendous blessings from it. Now, Bishop Jakels did not force me to go study canon law. He said, I'm not going to make you do this. Mm-hmm. But even in that, one, I enjoyed studying canon law far more than I thought I would. Mm. But our conversation was, you know, he asked me to do it. I said, well, give me some time to pray about it. And so I came back to him and I said, yeah, I'll do it. And he said, well, I don't hear any enthusiasm in that. He said, you know, when I was named bishop, he said, I was taken aback. He said, but then I began to get excited about the opportunities that were before me and ordinations and doing these things in the diocese and being able to see where this goes. And he said, I don't see that. I looked up, I said, Bishop, if you want somebody that's going to be excited about doing annulments for the rest of his priesthood, find somebody else. And he sat there in silence for a second. I'm like, maybe I overstepped. And he said, yeah, that's fair. But I'm very grateful, because that was our conversation. I'm like, I don't want to be out of parish ministry, because mm-hmm. that was what I wanted to do as a priest. And so I'm very grateful that Bishop Kemi continues to let me to experience priestly ministry as a parish priest as well.
Now, you went to Bishop Carroll, graduated from there, and then you went to Winona.
I went to four years. Immaculate Heart of Mary Seminary in Winona, Minnesota.
And then to Josephinum.
I went to the Josephinum, Columbus, Ohio. 4 years
there.
Yeah, 4 years there.
So that's why you're on the slideshow. Some guys step into seminary right out of high school, and I have a picture of a number, you, Father Aaron Spexar, Father Jacob Carlin, you know, all in that, and other guys too that live joyful, happy, blessed priesthoods. There's guys that go to college for a while and then step into seminary, and I've got a few pictures of those. But there's guys that finish college and work for a while, and just trying to get across the message of the guys that you go when the Lord invites you. And that's going to be at different stages at other guys. And don't feel like, well, I didn't experience this or I didn't do this. Well, if the Lord's calling you now, then that's probably okay. He's going to give something else along there or help you in some other way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's different paths. I mean, and even in our priesthood, there's different paths, different ways that the Lord is at work in each of us. And, you know, it can be really easy to compare ourselves to other guys and think, well, I don't have that gift or that talent. And, you know, he's a better preacher than me, or he's a better confessor, or, you know, he's got better hair. I'm looking at you, Hoffman.
I have never said that in my life.
I noticed you put the two of us with no hair or little hair on one side of the room, and the priest with hair on the other side. Mm-hmm. So segregation, whatever.
Yeah, oppression. Where else have you been assigned? What have been your assignments in 20 years?
So I started at St. Francis.
Oh, yeah.
Did you drive a Mustang?
I did have a Mustang.
You're kidding me.
That's all I remember about Brian at St. Francis.
Bought it when I was at St. Francis. Yep. And then I went to Pittsburgh, spent a couple years down there. Then I was pastor of Our Lady of Guadalupe in South Hutch. And then I was off to canon law studies in Washington, D.C. So I've been at St. Mark's since 2015 and judicial vicar since 2016.
I didn't realize Guadalupe was your first pastorate.
It was, yeah. Oh. I was also chaplain at Trinity High School when I was there.
Were you chaplain at Colgan too?
Not really.
The role didn't really exist.
Yeah, there was kind of a chaplain, kind of not. So when I was first started there, McElwee was kind of doing that, but he wasn't in a lot for that stuff. So I was doing most of the parish youth ministry stuff. Yeah. And so I kind of was over in the school a lot working with kids. Yeah.
When I got to Pittsburgh, Brian was the beloved former associate that they just
and now Chad
glowingly, is, so. Herbie's greatly loved.
He's taken up both of our places. places.
But I do remember, I don't know if you remember, I knew I was going down there. I heard many people mention your name. So I asked you to lunch before I went down there. Just like, okay, you enjoyed that place. They enjoyed you. Just tell me about the people and what to do. And that's been a tradition for me before each assignment is yeah. I try and look at, okay, who's done well in that place and take them to lunch and just kind of pick their brain and
I hope I gave them. You good advice.
It was terrible. It was terrible. I don't know how this guy.
I'm sorry that I failed you, Chad.
Just one of many times getting me ready for the. For those of that listening, Brian and I have offices in the Chancery together, and I probably pop into your office more socially than any other office in there, and you stop by my office a fair amount too, and so usually we have a chuckle somewhere along the day.
Well, your office is close to the stairwell, so you know if I'm coming up or coming down, it's easy to just stick my head around the corner and say hi. I use the, because my office is the basement, yours is on the first floor, and I use that as the way to step away from my desk when I'm tired of sitting there.
Yeah, I have to intentionally go towards yours office. Brian's office is hidden in the corner. Like it's the last bastion. If we were being invaded by zombies, he would go and set up shop in Brian's office.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the way we like it.
That's the last place zombies would want to go is the tribunal. None of us want to, not even the zombies.
You'd probably want to get out of my office and into the tribunal vault.
Ah, that's where you need to be.
Yeah.
I like this. What would be the safest places in the diocese during a zombie apocalypse?
Well,
that's a podcast of itself.
There's the vault, the upstairs vault, it's bigger, you can get more people in there, but the more hidden it'd be.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Cathedral safe would also be good.
I won't be looking at the entire diocese differently now. As a bishop asked me, where do you want to be assigned in the parish? I'm going to check out their zombie apocalypse scenarios. I feel like St. Mark's would be pretty safe there if zombies came. I feel like you'd have lots of backup to fight zombies.
I believe you would.
I feel like you'd have some parishioners that would relish the moment, like, I've been waiting for this day.
Oh, I'm already thinking of names. Who would say, Father, let me into the bell tower of the church? Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think we've come to the end of our time for today. So thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. Thanks, Brian, for being here today. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. The final word today goes to Father Brian.
And I thought it would just be appropriate to have a quote from St. Raymond of Penafort, who is the patron saint of canonists. So, the preacher of God's truth has told us that all who want to live righteously in Christ will suffer persecution. The only exception to this general statement is, I think, the person who either neglects or does not know how to live temporally, justly, and righteously in this world. May you never be numbered among those whose house is peaceful, quiet, and free from care, those on whom the Lord's chastisement does not descend, those who live out their days in prosperity and in the twinkling of an eye will go down to hell. Your purity of life, your devotion, deserve and call for a reward. Because you are acceptable and pleasing to God, your purity of life must be made purer still by frequent buffetings until you attain perfect sincerity of heart.
See you next week.